This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A bipartisan group in Congress has a new bill to save pensions for retired union coal miners throughout the Ohio Valley. As Becca Schimmel reports, the coal industry's downturn has left tens of thousands of pensioners at risk.
Legislators from the Ohio Valley and beyond introduced the American Miners Pension Act, or AMP, to shore up pensions promised to miners. The bill seeks to secure pensions for about 43,000 miners in Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia. West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin says Congress acted to protect miners' health benefits last year, but pensions got kicked down the road.
And every day that it goes without settling our pension problems, it's another day that's going to cost more.
Without congressional action, the United Mine Workers pension plan could become insolvent in about 5 years. The UMW blames the pension fund's decline on a downturn in coal markets and coal company bankruptcies. The AMP Act would transfer excess funds from the Federal Abandoned Mine Land Program to the UMW pension plan. Senator Manchin says bankruptcy laws are also at the root of the problem.
This will repeat itself time and time again. We're not going to change it unless we change the bankruptcy laws that puts the human being in a position to get basically some reprimand from a bankruptcy.
Manchin says the bill seeks a loan, not a bailout. The act would require the pension fund to certify each year that it's solvent and able to pay back the principal and interest. UMW representatives warned that if their pension plan collapses, the beneficiaries and their dependents will be moved into the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which could also put that important source of pension protection at risk. Robert Bailey was a coal miner for 36 years and retired from Patriot Coal, a company Peabody Coal created. Patriot carried many pension and health benefit costs from Peabody and has declared bankruptcy twice. Bailey says he worries he'll lose his main source of income if the UMW's pension plan becomes insolvent.
It would definitely be devastating to the majority of the coal miners that depend on this.
Bailey says he's developed black lung and is unable to work. His wife left work to stay home and care for him as well. He says the federal government promised long ago to ensure lifelong benefits for miners, a pledge he says the AMP Act would keep.
If they have any morals within themselves, to me, they would have to pass it.
Coal retirees have been fighting to secure their benefits for nearly 5 years. The average monthly pension payment in the Ohio Valley is about $500 to $600. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
The West Virginia Air National Guard's 130th Airlift Wing has sent a transport plane and crew from Charleston to support relief efforts in storm-damaged Puerto Rico. Liz McCormick has more.
According to the National Guard, the C-130 Hercules plane is transporting equipment from New York to Georgia before departing for the Caribbean island on Thursday. Colonel Randy Huffman, Vice Wing Commander of the 130th Airlift Wing, says they're helping in the efforts for American citizens in desperate need. Additionally, the 167th Airlift Wing in Martinsburg is also transporting supplies and has airmen in Puerto Rico and Georgia helping with airfield operations. The U.S. territory's governor said Tuesday, the official death toll from Hurricane Maria increased to 34. Governor Ricardo Rossello also said he believes the hurricane that struck on September 20th with winds over 150 miles per hour caused $90 billion in damage across the island. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:48. Partly sunny in the south, mostly cloudy in the north with a chance of rain, highs in the 70s and low 80s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 40s and 50s. And partly cloudy tomorrow with highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by West Virginia Paving, utilizing over 650 West Virginians that know our roads and ensure they are maintained with quality and safety. West Virginia Paving, a West Virginia company serving our communities. Visit wvpaving.com to learn more. And by West Virginia University Magazine, where Mountaineers share their stories online at wvumag.wvu.edu. In the latest episode of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Us and Them podcast, host Trey Kay tells us about an African-American man who broke one of the National Football League's last color barriers almost 50 years ago.
In January 1967, the very first NFL Super Bowl matchup was between Green Bay and Kansas City.
The Super Bowl is underway.
Packers led by quarterback Bart Starr and Chiefs Len Dawson, both of whom are white. Although there were black players in the NFL, it wasn't until 1969 that one would be named at the beginning of the season to the position of starting quarterback. Throughout the history of the NFL Super Bowl, the quarterback position was held by an African American only 7 times. Most recently, Carolina Panthers' Cam Newton was the 6th black quarterback to start a Super Bowl back in 2016. He was preceded by Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick, Donovan McNabb, and Steve McNair. Seattle Seahawks' Russell Wilson started in 2 Super Bowls. He won one of them, which made him the 2nd African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
Wilson to put it up. He's hit 7 different receivers in that catch. What a catch! Touchdown!
The first black QB to win the Super Bowl was Doug Williams, who led the Washington Redskins to victory back in 1988. This was a proud day for many African Americans. But that's not the story we're telling today. We're going to talk about another guy who was sitting among the 73,000 fans watching Williams that day. Another black NFL player who also has a significant story in the history of the sport.
I'm James Harris, former NFL player.
James Harris and Doug Williams are both alums of Grambling State, the historically black public university in Louisiana. And though their NFL careers began almost a decade apart, they both trained under Grambling's legendary head coach, Eddie Robinson.
Doug Williams, one of the things I was most proud of was to see him win the Super Bowl. Coach Robinson and myself was present at the Super Bowl. It was a big, enjoyable night for all of us.
In 1969, nearly 20 years before Doug Williams' landmark Super Bowl performance, James Harris was drafted by the Buffalo Bills. And after the Bills' training camp, he became the first black player in the history of the NFL to earn a job as starting quarterback. This was a goal Coach Robinson had set for Harris when he recruited him out of high school. Harris's coming of age as a player, first as a high school state champion in Louisiana, then at Grambling, coincided with the civil rights movement.
Growing up in the South, and my father was a preacher, you go into church each and every Sunday. And I remember looking at a sermon where every man is created equal. It's difficult to understand that when you're riding on the back of the bus, drinking out of black and white water fountains. It's difficult at a young age for you really to understand that. And it is even difficult when you go to college as an 18-year-old to understand the opportunities in America when getting good paying jobs, the opportunities to become executives in the country. You look at all the magazines, there are no black governors, there are no black presidents, and there are not even any black quarterbacks.
College football was a huge part of the system of segregation in the South.
That's Sam Friedman. He's an author and professor at the Columbia Journalism School.
It wasn't a college football was segregated, just incidentally, because everything else, movie theaters, bus stations, water fountains, public restrooms, hotels were segregated. College football was one of the pillars of segregation, because if you think back into the 1950s or 1960s, there's virtually no pro sports south of the Mason-Dixon line. And there's no pro baseball at that time south of St. Louis or Washington. Pro football franchises are just beginning to open up in the Sun Belt in the mid-60s. There's no pro basketball in the South. So college football was the regnant sport of the South, but it's also so culturally important in the South. It was so totally conflated with segregation.
Friedman chronicles James Harris's career from Grambling to the NFL in his book, Breaking the Line, a history of college football at historically black institutions during the Civil Rights Movement.
Breaking the color barrier at quarterback in pro football was maybe the single most important act of desegregation in American sports, because quarterback as a position and the opposition to blacks playing quarterback was completely tied into the most vile stereotypes that went with notions of white supremacy and black inferiority. Because a quarterback, I think, has to be the most cerebral position in any sport. If you look at a typical college or pro playbook, it's gigantic. It's like the thickest encyclopedia volume on your shelf, and then some. And the quarterback has to absorb not only all of his own roles on any given play, but he has to know what every other person on the offense is doing at the same time, because he has to be able to correct mistakes by teammates. He has to be able to analyze the defenses that he sees, and then he has to take this knowledge and, like a jazz musician, adapt it under changing improvisational circumstances during the game.
See the man coming from behind. He knew he had to get rid of it. Somehow he felt the presence of that man, fired the shot, threw it in hard to Don Warren. He couldn't handle it, but he did avoid the sack and also avoid an interception. This time working across the middle. Look at him survey the entire field, starting at his right and coming back, and Gary Clark just wide open on the play, but some kind of afternoon so far.
From a young age, James Harris was confident in his physical abilities, mental toughness, and creativity. There was no problem there. He believed he could compete with anyone. But the dream of playing quarterback in the NFL just didn't seem realistic at that time. Thinking about it seemed insurmountable in a culture of segregation where many believed that the black man was mentally inferior.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia.
Dr. King's iconic speech had a profound impact on James Harris, who was barely 16 years old.
Will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood? I have a dream.
In 1963, when Dr. Martin Luther King made that speech, you know, our country was changing, and we, as young people in high school, could see that.
Will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
When he said that one day we'll be judged by the content of our character and not the color of our skin, it kind of registered with me. And it was one of the things that moving forward, it may be a chance that I get a chance to play quarterback in the NFL.
We learn later in this Us and Them episode that James Harris did get a chance to play in the NFL. He was drafted, eventually by the Buffalo Bills.
When I got off the plane in Buffalo, New York, I just focused on doing whatever I can to be prepared to play, realizing that I may not get but one opportunity. I had to be ready for that one opportunity because they were cutting every day. And sometimes, you know, guys got one play, and they would cut you.
Perhaps the greatest challenge for Shaq Harris was preparing to lead his teammates, who were not at all like the guys he played with at Grambling.
At that time, I'd never really had a conversation with white people, other than when I was recruiting, and I was always quiet, wasn't saying much. I mean, growing up, a lot of times, when you confront it with white people, you didn't really look him in the face because they took that as a sign of disrespect or something. So we didn't grow up looking people in the eye. And all of a sudden, you know, now you got to step in this huddle. And you're supposed to, you got to show leadership, look people, you know, in the eye and call the play distinctly. And, I mean, that was a challenge because I hadn't had that type of experience.
That was an excerpt from WVPB's Us and Them podcast, Shaq, A Civil Rights Story. The full episode includes James Shaq Harris recalling the hate mail and death threats he received as an NFL quarterback. You can download the program wherever you find your podcasts or by visiting usandthempodcasts.com. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Public Broadcasting, WVPB Charles.